So we're on Daf Chesamid Aleph, and we're about to turn to Daf Chesamid Beis, and we're talking about the Sugya Motzi Shemra. But we still have one thing that we have to fill in on Daf Chesamid Aleph, and this is before the Sugya of Motzi Shemra, and that's the question of Ata Tavo as opposed to Ata Tavi. So before we begin for today, let me just ask you if you have the following pages that should say pages Sadi and Sadi Aleph. I'm hoping you'll have that because I don't seem to have any extra copies of that. Alright. So just to quickly review the Gemara, and this will be, I think this will be relevant to Mickey, this will be relevant also to David. I think you were here yesterday, were you?
I was not, no.
So let me just review so you'll know where we're holding. There are two psukim which address Yoshua with Chazak ve'amatz. One posuk, which is Dvarim Lamed Aleph, posuk Zion, is Moshe Rabbeinu addressing Yoshua. The other pasuk, which is in the same chapter, but it's pasuk Chav Gimel, here Chazak v'Amatz, but Hashem is addressing Yoshua. And this at the end of Sefer Dvarim is a piece which is focused on the transition between the Malchus of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Malchus of Yoshua. And within the context of that transmission or transition between Moshe and Yoshua, where Yoshua is, you know, Moshe is passing the baton over to Yoshua. So the Gemara notices a discrepancy in one word, not even in the word. It's more the conjugation of the word, the grammatical past tense or future tense of the word. In the first case, when Moshe addresses Yoshua, it says Chazak ve'amatz ki atah Tavo es ha'am. Tavo means to come with the people. El ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem lavoseichet. In the case of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, ki ato tavi es b'nei Yisrael el ha'aretz asher nishbati lahem. Meaning that you are, Yoshua, the active. You know, you're not part of the people. You're not just one member of the crowd, but rather you are the one who are bringing the people. You are the active agent to bring the people into the land. And the Gemara, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, quotes this as a contradiction. What exactly is Moshe Rabbeinu saying to Yoshua? Tavo, meaning you're going to come into the land together with the people. Whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying you're going to lead the people and bring them into the land. Meaning that you're the lone ranger. You're the active agent, independent of anyone else. You're not just one of the crowd, but you're the leader of the crowd. So Rabbi Yochanan answers that Moshe Rabbeinu said something to Yoshua, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said something totally different to Yoshua. Moshe said to Yoshua that your leadership role is together with the elders. You are with the elders as one body, as one entity. That's called Ata Vazkenim Shebedarimach. You're with them. You don't have independent control, but rather you have to act together with them in tandem. HaKadosh Baruch, on the other hand, is saying no. You, Yoshua, you're the Melech, you're the King, you're the sovereign ruler, and the Zekanim, the Sanhedrin, and the elders of the generation are subservient to you. And the principle of Rabbi Yochanan reads as follows: Dabar echad ladar, v'ein shnei dabarim ladar. There's only one leader to the generation. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Yoshua. There are no two leaders. You know, we cannot have two presidents, so to speak. There's only one president. So this is the Gemara on Daf Ches Amud Aleph. And you'll see this inside. And I want you to count up. Well, it's hard to count up because it's about two-thirds down from the top of the page. And the first word in the line is Hayonek. I don't know if that helps anybody. But again, you'll see about, again, if you're counting from the bottom, I would say it's approximately, could I say 20 lines up from the bottom?
A little more midway down.
Right, it's more than midway down. Not much more than midway down. So again, Ki Ata Tavo. Tavo means you'll come with them. And then Hashem says, Ki Ata Tavi. And Rabbi Yochanan reconciles this by saying, it depends who's speaking. Moshe says to Yoshua, you are together with the Zekanim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu corrects him, so to speak, and says, wait a minute, no, it's not that you're together with the Zekanim and you're on par with them, but rather you are the sole and exclusive leader of the people. You're not going to share that leadership role with the Zekanim. So I want you to take a look at a quote here on the bottom of page Sadi from the Brisker Rav. This is the Brisker Rav's commentary on the Chumash in that very parasha. And he says the following, that Yoshua really plays two different roles. He wears two different hats. Now, in order to appreciate what these two different roles or the different stati are, if there's such a word, we'll review what we said yesterday. And what we discussed yesterday, again, I'm reviewing this for those who weren't here yesterday, is that there's something called Melech, okay? And then there's something called
Nasi,
correct. Now, the Nasi has a certain element of the Melech, but not the other one. So what is going to be common, first we'll get the common denominator between a Melech and a Nasi, they both have what's called Srara. Srara, or otherwise known as Shevet, means control. They have authority to such an extent that they can impose the law against the will of the people, even if a person has to be physically compelled to obey the law. They have the Shevet, they're holding on to this club, so to speak, and they can beat the living daylights out of you until you comply with the law. That's called Srara or Shevet. It's otherwise known as Nisius Shel Malchus. But then there's another dimension of Melech, and that's called a Melech Begufo. Begufo means that he himself embodies the sanctity and the status of a Melech in his very being, and all the mitzvahs that apply to a Melech, there are many special mitzvahs which the Torah addresses to a king, they apply to this kind of a Melech, who's a Melech Begufo. He does not, the Nasi on the other hand, does not have the status of a Melech Begufo. So all the special mitzvahs about who he's allowed to marry, how he's allowed to marry, and how many horses he's allowed to have, and whether he takes the people out to Melchama, to war, to battle. For example, the halacha that a Melech has to have two Sifrei Torah. All that applies only to Melech Begufo, but not to the Nasi of Shel Melech. So you can have someone who's a Nasi of a Melech. And what we saw yesterday is that when we're talking about Nasius Shel Melech, but again, he's not a Melech Begufo, then what we're talking about is called Palga de Kesar. Does everybody remember this? Who was here yesterday? Palga de Kesar. Which means that the Kesar. At the time of the Romans, there was a Caesar, and then there was a second in command. Excellent, a second in command. And what you could have is a Kesar and a Palga de Kesar. They both simultaneously rule over the people. And in the case of a Melech and a Nasi, the Melech and the Nasi both rule over the people. They both have the power of Srara and Shevet. They can control the people, compel the people, even to cause physical damage and harm to a person if he refuses to comply with the law. But the Melech is the Melech, and all the din of Gufo Shel Melech applies exclusively to him. The Nasi is only Palga de Kesar. In other words, he has half of what the case that with the melech has. He's got the nesius of a melech, but he's not gufo shel melech. And the Gemara at the end of the Sefer Sanhedrin, in a vision, reveals a prophetic vision of the end of days. There's going to be David, the new David. He's going to be the melech, who shares the same name, and he's from the lineage of the original David. And he's going to be the melech, but at the same time, he's going to have a second in command. And that's going to be the original David. And the original David is going to be the palg of the Kesar. He's going to have the status of the Nesiyah Shel Melech. That's what we had yesterday. Now, with regard to Yoshua, we said that according to the Briski Rav, Yoshua is going to wear two hats. He's going to be the melech, but at the same time, he's going to be the Nasi. He has both roles to play. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu addresses Yoshua when he says, Tavo, right? When he says, Tavo, right? Tavo. In the capacity of Nesius. And with regard to Nesius, we have two Nesium, so to speak. We have the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, and he has the status of the Nasi. He has what we call the Nesius of Malchus. And then we have Yoshua, not only as the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, but also as the Melech. He is the Melech, which adds a whole new dimension, namely that he has the mitzvahs HaMelech, the Gufo. So that now we have, when you look at Yoshua and his relationship to the Sanhedrin, or specifically to the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, so then Yoshua has a double role. He is the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, and he's also the Melech. Oh, so Moshe Rabbeinu addresses Yoshua in his capacity as the Nasi, and he says the following: that your relationship as a Nasi to the other 70 members of the court is a relationship of Emo. Emo means you are together with them. In the language of the Gemara, it says, Atov Azkenim Shabadar Imcha, you together with the elders forming one body. Now again, Yoshua still is the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, but nevertheless, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, in any major decision, will have to consult with the Sanhedrin to get the majority to support his ruling or his decision. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Briski Rav, is addressing Yoshua not as a Nasi, in terms of the Nesiyah Shel Malchus, with his relationship with the Sanhedrin, but rather Yoshua as a Melech. And here, Yoshua is absolutely exclusive. He is a one-man show. He doesn't share his malchus with anyone. And that is the principle formulated by Rabbi Yochanan, Dabor Echad Lidor V'ein Shnei Daborim Lidor. There's only one melech that's appointed in any generation. There cannot be two melechim. You could have a melech and a nasi, and they would share some element of nesius, and there'll be an overlap. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to address Yoshua as the nasi. He's going to say to him, well, you're the nasi over the Sanhedrin. You have to operate and function together, right, in a symbiotic relationship with the Sanhedrin. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is addressing Yoshua as the Melech. And here we activate the principle of Dabar Echad Ein Shnei Dabar. There's no partnership in Malchus. There can only be partnership in what? In the Nesius. Very good.
The typo here. The second line. She said Kiatot Tavo rather than W. Because it's Moshe.
Oh, okay. Kiatot Tavo.
Tavo.
Okay, good. Excellent. Oh. Now, here we're going to learn the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. You remember Reb Chaim ben Attar, who lived about 4.5 centuries ago in the city of Tzfat, maybe 5 centuries ago. And he quotes the Or HaChaim in Parshas Va'era, back at the beginning of Shmos, but it's interesting that he splits it into two paragraphs. So don't get confused over here, because you'll see the next paragraph starts with the word Me'ata, but that's really a continuation of the previous paragraph. There's a very ambiguous pasuk at the very beginning of Parshas Va'era, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe v'el Aaron, Vayitzavem el Bnei Yisrael vel Paro Melech Mitzrayim lo tzias Bnei Yisrael meretz Mitzrayim. So we're not exactly sure. We don't understand what's the Vayidabra Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron, and then it says Vayitzavem. We're not exactly sure what was said here in this conversation, this dialogue, so to speak, between Hashem and Moshe and Aaron. And the Arachayim is going to say the following, that the word Vayitzavem, which follows the Vayidaber, is a reference to Hamlacha. Hamlacha means when you appoint someone as the king. And according to the Arachayim, HaKadosh Vayitzavem means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appointed both Aaron, both Moshe and Aaron, as the Melachim, Him Licham. He established them as kings. Again, this is going to be a big problem for us. Why? Because we just finished saying that you can only have one Davar and not two Davarim. But hold on to that for a minute. We'll come right back to that. Umeata, from this moment and on, says the Arachayim, once Moshe and Aaron were appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the kings over Bnei Yisrael and even over Paro. And here the Arachayim compares it to a different pasuk in Tanakh, which says Vayitzavem Hashem Nagid, to prove that Vayitzavem means that He appointed them as a king. Hine Mora'am al Yisrael val Paro. Mora'am means literally fear or awe, but it really means is that they have the power, the authority to compel Bnei Yisrael and Paro. They are the sovereign rulers to control Klal Yisrael mandate and make sure the Klal Yisrael live up to those mandates, and Paro. Paro now becomes subservient to the two kings, Moshe and Aaron. Uvishim Hachi. Therefore, Yiches Osom HaKosuf. The Torah is going to go into a whole Yichus and tell you who were the, what was the lineage and the ancestors, the ancestry of Moshe and Aaron. Why? Ki ein ma'amidim melech al Yisrael ela hamiyuchas. We have a principle that you can only appoint someone as a king if he has yuchsin. He can trace back his ancestry, and there's no, you know, there's no questions or psul. So the Gevuras Yitzchok says that this Arachayim presents a serious problem for everything that we've said and established in the name of the Brisker Rav. Because the Brisker Rav says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu addresses Yoshua and he tells him, V'ata Tavi, that you are on top and there's no one else that you have to share your leadership role with, you are the Melech. There cannot be a second Melech. And yet, the Arachayim HaKadosh seems to assume that there could be two Melechim. That Moshe and Aaron were simultaneously appointed as kings. How could it be? Furthermore, he says, we don't find anywhere that Aaron is called a melech, is called a king. In fact, the Gemara in Zvachim is outspoken about it and says that Aaron is not a king. Aaron is a Navi. Aaron is a Kohen. But he's not a melech. And how could there be two melechim simultaneously? So for this, we have another opportunity to review what we learned on Daf Hey and the Brisker Rav's insights into the Pasuk Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda. The bracha that Yaakov addresses to Shevet Yehuda is Lo Yosir, there would never be a termination of Shevet in the case of Yehuda. So the Gemara tells us here in Sanhedrin on Daf Hey that what does the word Shevet mean? Elu Rashe Goliel Shebebubble Sherodin. Please underline the word Rodin, the word Shevet, which means a club, you know, some sort of a weapon in your hand that's a Shevet, is a symbolic representation of what's called Rodin. Rodin means to force the people, as we said earlier, that the authority to force the people to comply with the law is called Shevet. And we identify the Roshei Golios, what we call the Reish Galusa, who is going to be from the descendants of Shevet Yehuda. The Reish Galusa is the Shevet. And there will never be a termination of this, you know, this, let's put it the other way around. Whenever there'll be a Reish Galusa, Yaakov promises, he guarantees Yehuda that the Reish Galusa will be from Yehuda's descendants. And they will be Shevet. What does it mean, Shevet? Rodim es Yisrael. Does everybody have that so far? Mm. If you don't have it, stop me. Slow me down. I'm on the roll here. You know, Rodim Es Yisrael. They can force the people. Then the Pasuk says, Umechokek, and a lawgiver. In other words, Yaakov Avinu guarantees that the lawgivers, the legislators, will never cease to be Mibein Raglav. These are the people who define the Torah, interpret the Torah, and establish the law. And that's a reference to Bnei Banav Shel Hillel. And again, Hillel was a descendant of Shevet Yehuda. And his descendants, Melamdim Torah Barabim, they will clarify the Torah publicly. Now the Rambam says the following. This is Perek Dalet Milchas Sanhedrin. What is the status of the Reish Galusa? Is he a king? Is he a melech? Well, we just finished saying that he's a Shevet, and he has the power and the authority, Rodim Es Yisrael. That sounds like a melech. Says the Rambam, yes. The Rosh Golios in Bavel were a replacement for the melech. Again, you cannot appoint a melech in Bavel. And that's going to be a Tosefta. We're going to learn soon that a king can only be appointed in the land of Israel. The Reish Galusa was appointed outside the boundaries of Israel in Babylonia. So he cannot be a melech technically. But the Rambam says that the Reish Galusa is a replacement for a melech. So in Eretz Yisrael we have a melech, in Chutzlatz we have a Reish Galusa. The Yeshlem Lirdos Es Yisrael, Shedemar Lo Yosur Shevet Miuda Elu Rashi Goliel Shevet Bavel. So the Rambam identifies Shevet as the replacement, the substitute for a melech. What does that mean? That the Reish Galusa, so far as he's a Shevet, he has the power of Rodim Es Yisrael, he's a replacement for the melech. Says the Brisker Rav, that what it means is Lo Yosur Miyehuda, we're going to have two guarantees for the lineage, the descendants of Yehuda. Number one, Nesius Shel Malchus, again, underline that word. We're not talking about Melech. When the Rambam says that the Reish Galusa replaces the Melech, he doesn't mean the Melech Begufo, but rather he means Nesius Shel Melech, which is the Shevet, which is the power to enforce the law. And that's now vested in the hands of the Reish Galusa. So when the Rambam says that the Reish Galusa is the substitute for the Melech, what does he mean, the substitute for a Melech? Is he really a Melech?
No.
He doesn't replace the Melech. The Melech is a Melech Begufo with all the mitzvah of Melech. That's only in Eretz Yisrael. The Reish Galusa in Chutz Laaretz has the Nesius Shel Melech. In other words, he has that dimension of authority over the people of Israel, which is called Nesius Shel Malchus. And not only that, but Yaakov Avinu guarantees that from the lineage of Yehuda there will be Nesius Shel Sanhedrin, which means the Nesius of Torah, of Mechokek, not only Shevet to impose the law but also to interpret the law and to derive and establish the legislations. That's going to be in the hands of the Bnei Banav of Hillel, who were the Nesiim and the Rashi Sanhedrin Yagdola. So all the Nesiim over the Sanhedrin came from Shevet Yehuda, and they were the Bnei Banav of Hillel. That's called the Mechokek. And not only that, but the Reish Galusa comes from Shevet Yehuda, which means in Chutz Laaretz, the descendants of Yehuda will be Shevet. They will be in control. They will have Nesius Shel Sanhedrin. Ad Kan Dvarav. That's a summary of what the Brisker Rav has to say. So let's just summarize. He says, in summarizing, that the Reish Galusa in Bavel did not have a Toras Melech, meaning they don't have the status of a Melech Begufo, because the Tosefta says, Eima Mida Melech Bechutz Laaretz, but they had Nesius Shel Malchus. So in the case of a Melech that was appointed in Eretz Yisrael, he has two different dimensions. Number one, he has Toras Melech, Shechal Begufo, so he has the status of a Melech in his guf, and that is a result of his being appointed as a king. He gets Meshicha, he has to be, you know, anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, and he has a whole slew of mitzvahs. That's called a Melech Begufo. But that's only where? in Eretz Yisrael. Sheinis, now we have another din that also applies to a melech, of Nesiyah Shel Malchus. In other words, not only is he sanctified through the Shemen HaMishka with Kedushas Melech and all the Chalos Mitzvahs of a melech, but he also is appointed and invested in him is the authority of Nesiyah Shel Malchus. He becomes a Shevet. And therefore, he has the status of a Nasi for Srara, to lord it over the people, Shlita, to control the people and subjugate them, even if it means using the club. Now, the Reish Galusa could not possibly be what? A Melech Begufa, because he's where? In Bavel. And the only Melech Begufa is where? In Eretz Yisrael. But he does have the status of a Melech as far as Nesiyah Shel Malchus. Oh, if that be the case, let's go back to the Arachayim HaKadosh. There's a fundamental difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen. When the Arachayim HaKadosh tells us that Vayitzavim, which is a reference to appointing both Aaron, right? Vayitzavim means he appointed them in plural, referring to both Moshe and Aaron. What that's referring to is the Nesius Shel Malchus. Moshe Rabbeinu will be the exclusive Melech Begufo, Vayhi Bishur Melech, right? That's a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. But as far as Aaron is concerned, that's a whole different story.
How can Moshe be Melech Chutz-Laretz?
Because the Halacha of Eretz Yisrael only applies Mishoshe Nichnasu Eretz Yisrael. Before they go into Eretz Yisrael, there's no condition of Eretz Yisrael. The condition of Eretz Yisrael and Melech only applies when they enter into the land of Israel. That's a sugya somewhere, don't ask me where. So he says the following: Niret emayde kosav ekra vayitzavem al bnei Yisrael hainu himlicham al bnei Yisrael. Do you see the pasuk vayitzavem el bnei Yisrael? It's all about shevet. It's all about shlita. It's all about controlling the people of Israel. Lo asam lemalachim lahanach dinim atluim bechalos arts. The pasuk of vayitzavem al bnei Yisrael is not referring to the melech begufo. And that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is appointing the two of them, Moshe and Aaron, but rather Asom Kiroshe Golios. But rather we're talking about Nesiyah Shel Malchus. Now, where's the precedent for Nesiyah Shel Malchus in Allah? Where do we find an occasion or a category of someone who is not a Melech, but he has the Nesiyah of Melech? That's the Reish Galus on Bavel, who is a Bimko Melech, and he has the power of Lirdos Sasam. He could pressure them even physically with threats and clubs in order to make sure that they comply with the law. That's called the Nesiyah Shel Malchus. When the Arachayim HaKadosh says that as a result of Ayitzavim there was an awe of the people. You remember that? That was the paragraph. Me'at ha'yom moram al Yisrael. What does it mean? Moram al Yisrael. Moram al Yisrael means that now Klal Yisrael have to be afraid of them. For example, they, Moshe and Aaron, could command the people of Israel to leave, to exit from Mitzrayim. So now, as a result of Ayitzavim al Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael has to comply with the mandate of Moshe and Aaron, the Nesiyah Shel Malchus, and therefore they cannot refuse to go out of the land of Israel, of Mitzrayim. There were plenty of Jews who didn't want to leave the land. And therefore, Mikana Tolomit Sheyesh LeMoshe V'Aaron Lirdos V'Ish Yisrael HaMamayin Lotzeis. Again, I don't know what would be if there were masses of Jews who would refuse to leave. I'm not budging from Mitzrayim. I like the doga. I like the fish. I like the what do they call them? The how you say it in English? Kishuim. The zucchini. I like Egyptian zucchini. I don't want to leave the land. But again, if he's talking about an individual, Yanko Beryl says, I'm not leaving. Here, do something. So we're going to beat you. Moshe and Aaron are going to beat him up, right? So therefore, lo asam melech lechol dini malchus el l'nesiyah shel malchus lirdos es Yisrael. So I'm not sure. Asher, you asked me before if Moshe has a full fledged status of a melech. I don't know. He seems to be saying, at least in this context. But then you have the pasuk v'yibishu melech. Yeah. Then you'd have to work that out. Oh, ulefi. Then now we can answer our original question. We never found anywhere that Aaron is called a melech, and not only that, they cannot be two melachim at the same time. The answer is that Aaron was only being appointed here as Nesiyah Shel Malchus. With regard to Nesiyus, we could have more than one Nasi. But the Brisker Rav himself seems to assume that even with regard to Nesius Shel Malchus, you can only have one Nasi. Because the Brisker Rav says in his commentary in Parshas Vayelech that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu addressed Yoshua, he was talking to Yoshua about Nesius Shel Malchus. And he was giving over to Yoshua the right, the sole exclusive right that's invested in Yoshua and only in Yoshua of Shevet, of Nesius Shel Malchus, Lirdos Esa'am, even without this Canaan. And on that, the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan applies the principle of Dabar Echad L'dar, that there could be only one leader, so we're talking about Nesius Shel Malchus. That's going to undermine our entire understanding of the Archaim HaKadosh. Because the Archaim HaKadosh is saying that both Moshe and Aaron were simultaneously appointed as the Nesius Shel Malchus, and we're not going to apply the principle of Dabar Echad, there's only one leader and not two leaders. So the Brisker Rav would not be able to survive this interpretation that Vayitzaveim means that both Moshe and Aaron were simultaneously appointed as the Nesius Shel Malchus, because that's going to violate and irritate the principle of Dabar Echad. But Venira, in the last paragraph, Midiri Arachayim, that Minuyam Haya, their appointment was Rak L'shah. Here, perhaps the Brisker Rav can admit it, can accept the Aruch Chaim, that maybe this is not the real full fledged Nesius. When a person is appointed as a Nasi, that's an appointment which continues ad infinitum, and the principle is Ein Dabar, the Dabar Echav Ein Shnei Dabarim. You can't have two Nesius. But what the Aruch Chaim is talking about is a limited, temporary Nesius Shel Malchus. Again, in the case of Melech Begufa, there's no such thing as a temporary, you know, we have Kinyanim Lizman, I can sell you something for a month. But you can't appoint someone as a king for a month. Either he's a king or he's not a king. Because that's Chal Begufa, and that's the Olam Void. But in the case of Nesius, there's such a thing as giving him the club, so to speak, on a temporary basis. Here, it's yours for this, it's yours for that. Is Yesh Lomar, if the two Nesiim are overlapping for a very specific period of time and for the purpose of taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, that if somebody will refuse to leave Mitzrayim, then Moshe and Aaron in charge as Nesius Shel Malchus of forcing him to leave Mitzrayim, then you could have two Nesiim simultaneously. Okay, Rav Osei, now we go back to the sugya of Motzi Shemra.
The mountains is not dependent on the arts at all.
Right, that was Osh's point. You know, it's how could in the wilderness Moshe Rabbeinu be appointed as a melech? So we're going to say that according to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, it wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed as a melech. He was appointed with the status of Nesius Shel Malchus, and that applies even in Bavel, even in Chutzos, and even in the Midbar. Now, was Moshe Rabbeinu in fact a Melech Begufo? My impression is that he was Vayehi B'Shurim Melech, but we could research that. You know, that requires a lot more thought. Chazal say that Vayehi B'Shurim Melech is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, did he have a full status of Melech Begufo? And then you have to reconcile that with the Tosefta, as I said before. How could the Tosefta say that there's no appointment of a Melech in Chutz Laaretz when Moshe was appointed in Midbar? Or do we say that Vayehi B'Shurim Melech is referring to the Nesius Shel Malchus? I don't believe that the Aruch Chaim would accept that, because the Aruch Chaim is saying Vayitzaveim. Okay, no, actually, maybe that's not so, because Vayitzaveim is only for Yitzhiyam Yimitzrayim on a temporary basis.
This Brisker Rav answers up better, because I had a question before on the smicha of the Reish Galusa, how it supersedes that of the Nasi. And this seems to...
That's interesting. That's a good point, because the Reish Galusa has not just a temporary he's not just part of the Sanhedrin, but he is the Melech, you know, the substitute for Melech. He has the Nesius Shel Malchus. Okay. So where are we up to? We're on the bottom of Daf Ches Amud Aleph, and you'll see if you count up from the bottom. How many lines? Five lines. Let's count to one, two, three, four, five lines. Correct? So the Mishnah records a machlokes, which is going to occupy our minds for a while, between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about how many judges have to sit on the court to try a case of Motzi Shemra. Now, Motzi Shemra has two dimensions to it. There is the possibility of putting her to death if Edim come and support the husband's claim that she had this relationship during the last 12 months of Erusin. And there's a judgment as far as Dini Mominus is concerned, because the Torah says that in event that the Motzi Shemra slanders this woman and he's fabricating the truth, then he has to pay Measa, he has to pay a certain sum of money as a knas. So that's a monetary case. So we understand intuitively Rabbi Meir's approach here in our Mishnah, that if the husband comes in with a monetary claim, now, I'm sorry, I jumped the gun. Now, with regard to monetary claim, here too, we have to split between two dimensions. There's the ksuba, and then there's the mar kesef that we spoke about before. The ksuba, who's the toveya in the case of ksuba? Who is the plaintiff? Do you know the word plaintiff?
Yeah.
So who is the plaintiff in the case of a ksuba?
The father of the bride.
The father of the bride is holding on to the ksuba. He doesn't need to sue anybody for the ksuba until such time as his son-in-law divorces his daughter. But he's not the plaintiff. The plaintiff here is the one who's trying to undermine the ksuba, right, and disqualify the ksuba. That's the Baal. Right. But who's the plaintiff in the case of Meir Kesef? That's going to be the father, because he's going to sue his son-in-law for libel, for a slander. But in any event, whether it's the husband who's suing in court for a let's call it a mekach toast, meaning he was fooled and therefore he wants to be mafsid the ksuba, or whether it's the father who's suing the baal because he's slandering his daughter and he wants him to pay the mayor the knas, in both cases, how many judges would we need?
Three.
Only three. And in that sense, Rabbi Meir is right. If two witnesses come into Beis Din to testify that she had this relationship and now we have to put it to death, that becomes a din of nefashos, and then we would require 23 judges. But ostensibly, when we start the case, there's no reason to understand the Chachamim and require anything more than three judges, because when he comes into Beis Din, his claim is that he wants to be mafsid her the ksuba. That's a monetary claim. He doesn't want to pay the ksuba when he was fooled and she had this relationship. But at this point, he has no witnesses. If he has witnesses, okay, then we'll start the case with a different tefillah. You know, we'll have a different claim. Then the claim will be against her in order to condemn her for a capital crime. And then we'll bring, you know, then we have the Edim and we'll set up a judgment of 23 judges. What compels the Chachamim from the get-go to establish that in this case we need 23 judges? That's going to be the machlokas that we're about to embark upon between Ula and Rava. And we're going to soon see that it's not just Ula and Rava, there are going to be a whole bunch of other possibilities. But for the time being, we're going to focus on the first two possibilities, namely that of Ula and that of Rava. So, v'chiyesh bo dinin nefashos mayhavi, why did the Chachamim say that we need a court that's made up of 23 judges? Because the dinin nefashos, right now, in the present moment, there's no dinin nefashos. So, mayhavi means what are you worried about? Mayhavi, why is it significant? You have a potential for dinin nefashos, but that would only become realistic if and when two witnesses come in to testify. Right now, we have no two witnesses. Again, if we had two witnesses, then even Rameir would require a court of what?
20.
Of 23 judges. So Ula is going to say, you know what? We always have to be worried about witnesses. You know, the skeleton in the closet. You know, the witness is somewhere, you know, in the shadow. There's something called Laz. Laz means that as soon as the Baal comes in, and he says in Bezdin, Pesach Pasuk Matzasi, this woman is not a Basula, and I don't want to pay the Ksuba, which is a monetary claim. But once that happens, in front of a court of three judges, what happens is that a rumor goes around, and the word is out in the street that this husband came in to complain about his wife, and by registering this complaint, two witnesses might actually figure out that what they saw was very relevant. And there could be a capital case over here. So we always have to, according to the Chachamim, anticipate that the Eidim will come. So now, okay, we want to anticipate that the Eidim, you know, might come. But right now, the Eidim didn't come yet. So here we have machlok between Rashi and the Ran. And there are two ways of understanding what Ula has in mind for the Chachamim, based on this laws of Chayshina laws. And Rashi seems to assume that there's a possibility here of, what word can I use? I'm going to use the phrase a laid back attitude. Let me try to explain what I mean, and you'll give me a better word for this. You start a judgment with three judges. Say the Chachamim, at some point you're going to require another 20 judges. You know what? Maybe that case will fall between the cracks. Maybe no one is going to actually follow through. It's going to be such that, look, we tried the case in front of three judges, and now the Eidim come in. You know what? Maybe there'll be some sort of lackadaisical attitude here. I'm not sure exactly who's going to be responsible for this passive kind of attitude. And they'll never actually go through the case of capital judgment with 23 judges. It's going to somehow fall between the cracks. So that's what Rashi is going to say the following. I'll give you a summary of Rashi. He says, in Mishilu Bishlosh, if they began with three judges, because right now there's no din in nefashos, there are no eidim. Yesh lach shosh, we have to worry that if eidim come through, then yanichu es hadover kmo shehu, they'll leave it as it is, and they'll say, you know what, we're not going to go through the whole hassle here of adding 20 judges, because what's going to be the ultimate result or repercussion of accepting these eidim? We're going to have to put it to death. You know what, that's not a pleasant thing. We're not going to go through the whole thing. So let me ask you a question. What happens? Is it a tragedy of tragedies if a woman was guilty of this crime and we never actually try her and put her to death? We never condemn her to death. So Rashi quotes a pasuk in the Chumash. It says, "Ubiarta hara mikirbecha," which means you have to destroy and uproot evil. The parsha of putting a capital someone who was condemned for a capital crime to death is not just a green light, you know, it's a license and it's a heter, you know, we're allowed to put someone to death. It's a requirement. It's part of the Tariq Mitzvah that someone who is guilty of a crime that engenders a thief misa has to be put to death. So the Rabbanu want to guarantee that we start this case in such a way that we can finish it. Meaning, if we have to worry about Eidim, and there's a serious statistical probability that Eidim will come in because of the laws, because of the kol, then we want to start the case from the get-go in a way that will guarantee that we'll fulfill the mitzvah of Ubiarta hara mikirbech. That's the opinion of Rashi. The Ran has another interpretation. The Ran says that Rashi's interpretation is very far from the Gemara. The Gemara never actually hints at this, of this Bi'arta Arom Mikirbecha. But rather, we're afraid that if we start with three judges, and then at some point we're going to have to add another 20 judges, the spectators will come to the mistaken conclusion that there's something wrong with these three judges. Why did they start the case and they couldn't finish the case? They don't realize that Eidim came in to testify about Tznus, and therefore they had to beef up the court because it became a capital crime. So rather than have to go through this two-stage process, which might possibly jeopardize the reputation of these judges, because all of a sudden, you know, the Bezdin decided that these three judges don't qualify to issue a decision, Again, the reason for that, of course, we and you and I know, because Adam came in to testify and jack it up to a criminal, a capital case. They don't know that. They think that's because there's some question about the authority of these judges. That's the way the Ram learns the sugya. Rav Meir Sovrein Choshen L'Las. Rav Meir says that the statistical probability that Adam will come in, I mean, why didn't the Baal bring Adam? He didn't even claim he had witnesses. Oh yeah, the Rabbanim are going to say, well, maybe he didn't know about the witnesses. And the witnesses, you know, just spontaneously generate themselves because they hear the call. But Rav Meir says, no, why didn't the Baal bring in the witnesses? Apparently there are no witnesses. We don't have to worry about witnesses. The possibility and statistical probability that there are witnesses is so low that we don't have to consider and be worried about that possible development in the case. And if that development comes, then Enoch Inami will be able to judge the case with 23 judges. So according to Ula, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is whether we start the case with 23 judges. Meaning, do we assume the possibility that Adam will come, and therefore from the get-go, even though the Baal is not claiming he has Adam, we're going to anticipate the likelihood that there will be Adam, and therefore we have to judge this case as if there were Adam. So from the get-go, how many judges do we need? We need 23. Or do we say, no, we're not anticipating and expecting any judges and any witnesses, and therefore we'll start the judgment as a monetary case. The Baal is claiming that I found it to be a Pesach Pasuach. I don't want to pay for a ksuba, and therefore all we need is three judges. But again, what's important here, if you can make a note of it, because it'll help us as we go through this complicated sugya, please make a note that according to Ula, in the Chachamim, we begin the judgment with 23 judges. There's no stage, according to the Chachamim, at least in Ula's frame of reference, where we began with three judges. Rava is going to have a whole different interpretation. And the reason why I have to hack around this idea into our heads is because the Gemara is going to raise a stira, a brisa that contradicts Ula, because the brisa has at least in one stage where they started the judgment with three judges. And that makes no sense according to Ula, because according to Ula's interpretation, Chachamim, nowhere, no how could we start the judgment with three judges. The whole point is Chashina Lalaz, and therefore we have to anticipate the Eidim as if they were here, and we require 23 judges from the get-go.
What are the options of the three judges if Eidim come? They must bring in another 20? What?
Yeah, because the Torah says Ubiyaka Arami
Kirbech. But there's no other option.
I don't know of another option. Maybe you have something in mind. I don't know. But that's in my understanding. That's the only option that you have. And we're required to do so. Okay, that's Ula. Rava Omar, Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Lilaz, Lo Chayshina. It means that we don't have to anticipate, even according to the Chachamim, that Adam will come. And therefore, presumably, we could start the judgment with three judges, even according to the Chacham, because Lo Chayshina Lalaz. Well, we started the judgment with three judges, and now, guess what? The Baal produces two witnesses. And now, all of a sudden, the nature of the judgment of the case changes fundamentally, essentially, and it becomes a dine nefashis case. So what do we have to do? We have to now add 20 judges to the bench. Now, Rav explains that the scenario which is being addressed by Rabbi Meir and Chachamim has three parts to it. We'll call it time T1, time T2, and time T3. Initially, what happens is the well, let me read it to you inside. He says, "Hacha bechoshen lechvodim shal rishonim kam mifligi." The Gemara says the following: "Hacha mayaskinon kigon di ichnaf be esrim utlasa lemeidan dini nefashas vi'i badur vi'omer lehu dainu mi mios bedine momenos." Okay. So what happens now is that according to Rava, the case was the following. Initially, the Baal came in to Beis Din saying, claiming that he has witnesses to testify that she had this nus, this illicit relationship. At the end, he didn't find his witnesses. So we gathered together 23 judges. We didn't even start the case because, guess what? There are no Edim. So what we did was Ibadur. Ibadur means we sent them home. Now we send them home. The Amar Lahu, and now the Baal claims, Dainu Limia Dine Mominos. At least give me a judgment on my claim. My claim of Hefsek Ksuba. Now, what's going on over here? She has a Ksuba. He wants to claim that the Ksuba is invalid. It would seem that the burden of proof is on him, because we had every reason to assume she had a Cheskas Pesula, that his Ksuba is valid, and it's binding, and he agreed to that Ksuba. Nobody coerced him, nobody bludgeoned him into it. Now he's claiming that, well, I found her to be a Ba'ula. So the burden of proof is on him to prove that she's a Ba'ula. And the answer is no. He's believed, at least as far as the Ksuba is concerned, even without testimony, even without being supported by witnesses. Why? So this is a famous Gemara at the beginning of Masechta Ksubas, which we didn't learn together. And the Gemara has what's called Einon Torach B'Seudu Mafsida, meaning when a person invests in a marriage, it's a very stiff, a very serious financial investment. So, for example, I don't know if you can, I don't know if there are any statistics on this, unless you're a Gera Chassid, but what is the average wedding cost? Anybody know? Let's say in the United States of America today.
$50,000 to $80,000.
$50,000 to $80,000, right? That's a lot of money. You know, for a rich person, it's probably $1 million or more than that. I was at a wedding, I can't begin to tell you, the flowers themselves were probably worth $50,000. I mean, this is 10 years ago in the Waldorf Astoria in Manhattan. I mean, it's just England over, so that's why in Ger they have a takon. But anyway, so there's a lot of money invested. So the Gemara says in Ksubis in the first parak that when a husband comes in with a sour face and he says, Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, and therefore this whole deal is off, he must be serious because he just invested a heck of a lot of money that went down the tubes. He's not going to get his money back. There's no backs over here because the food was eaten, the flowers were this, and then the hall has to be paid. So that gives him a certain nemonis. Again, that nemonis is not enough to put a woman to death. Well, first of all, we don't know exactly when she had this nus. We don't know if it's miritzono. Now, so for that, we need Aiden. There's no question. So we only jack this up to a Dini Nefashis case if and when there are Aiden. But in the absence of Aiden, there is a Dini Mominos, and that's why the Baal is coming forward and demanding that he has a judgment for Dini Mominos. So Rebbe Meir is going to say, well, let's gather together three judges. It's a Dini Mominos case. Why? Because his Edim never showed up. And as far as we know, there are no Edim. And we have no reason to assume that there will be Edim. So, because we hold the Lazlo Chashina, right? And even the Chacham are going to say the Lazlo Chashina. But here the Chacham are going to disagree with Rabbi Meir. And they're going to say, you know what? Since initially, at stage one, when he came in, he claimed he had witnesses, we already gathered together 23 judges. And now we're going to tell them to go home because there are no Edim. But on this very case, we'll call it Reuven versus Leah, right? In this case, we're going to now judge Bedini Mominus because he claims, well, at least as far as Ksuba is concerned, you can accept my claim even if it's not supported by witnesses, based on that Chazok Einem Toreach V'Sudim Afsida. And now, so the Chacham say, we already gathered together 23 judges. And now, on the very same case between Reuven and Leah, we're going to judge the case with three judges. That means we're going to send home 20 judges. Well, that's going to be Choshen L'Kvodom Shel Rishonim. We have to worry about the kavod, the esteem of the people. regarding these 20 judges that were sent home. In other words, do the people hold these judges in esteem when they find out in this very case, you know, which is on the front pages of the local, you know, local rag, and it says, you know, Reuven versus Leah, and all of a sudden it's only 3 judges. They had originally gathered together a bezdin of 23 judges because he claimed he had witnesses. Well, it turned out that this was a the Baal was full of hadiah. He did not have witnesses. And now he wants a modernist case. So Rameh says, okay, we'll give a modernist case. We only need 3 judges. And the Chachamim will say, no. We still have to judge it as if it were a capital case. Not because we think it's going to be a capital case. We have no anticipation that Edom will come. Lo chayshina lelaz. But rather because of Kvodom shel Rishonim, those who were initially called in on the Bezdin. Now again, the language of the Gemara is the ichnif. Do you see that word, the ichnif? The word the ichnif means to gather together. And they gathered together 23 judges. I'm not sure exactly what happened here. Was there some period of time in which they actually served as judges? Because Ivdur means that, you know, they realized that the Baal said he had Edom, but there are no Edom. You know, where is Edom? Where are his witnesses? And he didn't bring them. At that point, you know, they went home. So I'm not sure, you know, Yesh Lachar, I'm not sure if at one point in time these 23 judges had a status of a Bezdin. But at least in the eyes of the spectator, it appears as if they were appointed as Dayanim for this case. Again, based on the claim of the Baal that he has Edom. And now if we're going to shift to a lower court, so to speak, of 3 judges, then since these judges were called upon and they were gathering together for the judgment, it could be, so to speak, an insult to the reputation of these judges. So we'll try to clarify this as we go along. What we're up to now is Daf Ches Amud Beis Meisvei. And this is where we got stuck yesterday. So I'm hoping that today we'll do a little bit better. Okay, Meisvei. The Gemara now quotes a Braisa. Now, this Braisa is dedicated to the Shitas Chachamim. So Rabbi Meir is not mentioned in this Braisa. And therefore, we have to analyze this Braisa from the perspective of Ula and from the perspective of Rav. Chachamim Omrim in the Braisa, Tevo Mamon Bishlosha, which literally means that if the Baal came in initially and he admitted he had no witnesses, but he's coming to sue as a plaintiff against Har Ksuba. And how many judges do we need?
3
judges. That's true even according to Rabbi, even according to the Chachamim, because Rabbi will say the subject of this price is the Chachamim. You know, if it would have been Rabbi Meir, okay, you know, all we need is 3 judges. So let's go back to Ula for a moment. Ula just finished telling us on Daf Ches Amud Aleph that from the get-go we have to anticipate, according to Chachamim, that Edom will come because Chayshin and Lalaz. We have to start the case from the get-go with 23 judges. And the Braisa says, no, we start the case with 3 judges. And then, second stage, this is Shlav Bet, Tavo Nefashos, so all of a sudden, the Baal claims, I found 2 witnesses. That wasn't his initial claim. Then we need Esther Vishlosha. So Gemara says that this could reflect the Ashita of the Chachamim according to Rava. Bishlema le Rava, Tvo Mamun Tchila is Bishlosha. Rava's understanding of the Chachamim was that the reason why the Chachamim required 23 is because initially, from the get-go, they gathered together 23 judges. Why did they gather together 23 judges? Because the Baal claimed that he has Edom, and then they found out that the Baal is full of hot air, he doesn't have Edom. And the question is, do we send these judges home when we now want to reduce the case to a monetary case? And that's Chayshinu L'Kvodim Shel Rishonim, that's Rava. But certainly if the Baal came into Bezdin at stage 1, he admitted he doesn't have, to the best of his knowledge, there are no witnesses out there, then it's a pure monetary case. There's no Chayshinu L'Kvodim Shel Rishonim. So the Brisa here makes very, very good sense if it reflects the understanding of the Chachamim of Rava. Tavol Mom and Tchila, the reason why they initially set up a Beis Din of three is because the Baal said, I don't have any witnesses, all I have is my claim, and my claim is that she should lose her ksuba, is Bishlosha. Tavol Nefashos, Tchila, but if on the other hand, when the Baal came into Beis Din from the get-go, he claimed he had witnesses, is then we have to gather together 23 judges, Afilu Mamon. Why Afilu Mamon? Let's say the judges decide that there are no Edim, you know, they give it a month or whatever they do, they wait for the Edim, no Edim show up. You know, he's on his cell phone, this Baal, you know, he's calling all his friends and no one shows up. He has no witnesses. Is then, even though it's only a monetary case, the Esrim Ushlosha. So everything fits into a beautiful place according to Rava. So again, let's go over it one more time. According to Rava, it depends what his initial claim was. When he first came to Beis Din, what did the Baal, what words came out of the Baal's mouth? If he claims he has no witness, if he admits that he has no witnesses, all he's coming in is for a monetary claim, so Shlosha. If on the other hand, at some point, Behemshech, he claims that he has witnesses, then the Chachamim say that based on that claim, we have to gather together 23 judges. And if we find out, and even if we find out that he doesn't have witnesses, and then he claims, well, at least hear me out on the ksuba, which is monetary, we'll still maintain the 23 judges because Chayshin Lekvom Shel Rishon. That's beautiful. El Oli Ula, but according to Ula, who says that there'll never ever be a judgment in Motzi Shemra. Even if the Baal says there are no Edim, I don't know of any Edim, and even if his claim is only monetary, we have to begin with 23 judges, because Chayshin and Lelaz. And Chayshin and Lelaz, according to Ula, means that we have to already consider the statistical probability that Edim will show up. They'll hear the call, they'll say, wait a minute, there's something fishy going on here. We saw her under the boardwalk, and now we know that she was having this illicit relationship. Is then we're going to require 23 judges from the get-go. So what does the Braisa mean when it says that according to Chacham Tavo Mamon, since his claim was only on the Ksuba, on monetary claim, there's Shlosha? That's not so. Because Chayshinon Lelaz. Kasha. So the Gemara says that this Braisa remains a difficult Braisa according to Ula. I worked very, very hard on this because it's not easy. I mean, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right, so for tomorrow, we'll start with Rava. Rava has his Arisha B'chabura. He gets together the lion of his group, and the Gemara is going to identify him as Rav Chiya Bar Oven, and the two of them together are going to try to reinterpret this Braisa according to Ula with a Hacha B'mayaskinan, with a really complicated Ukimto, it has to do with Edim Zovimim. So if anyone's interested, at 10:30 this morning we'll have an Iyun Shir. We'll try to again figure out Rabbeinu Tam in the case of Trey and Akhosha. And I wish you all a great day. If anyone has any comments or questions, I'm here, and you can ask them.